And we are here. Welcome to Real Estate is Cool with Brendan Cunningham as your host. And why do we say that real estate is cool? Well, since we work for Husfar Real Estate, we like to say, as far as I know, because we're kind of a cool company. You know what? Here's the thing. We're going to be talking a lot of, in the next few weeks, and hopefully we'll have a guest call in today, a very special guest. And we're going to talk about what makes a real estate transaction cool. A lot of people buy real estate. A lot of people sell real estate, and they have maybe less than an optimum experience. But we're going to look at all the cool elements that go into a transaction. And frankly, a lot of people like real estate because it's a fun thing to talk about. We see shows and flipping houses and all this. People get very excited about real estate. I always talk and I say that people are usually interested in one of two things, not necessarily in this order, real estate and sex. I think they're more interested in real estate, to tell you the truth. And having said that, we're going to talk about many things that affect the value of real estate, particularly in the world of 716. Now, having said that, let's look at some of the things that go into a real estate transaction right now. And, well, we'll categorize these as some of the biggest home seller mistakes. A lot of people are selling houses. I think they just stick a sign in the ground, and it'll be really cool when somebody shows up or a line of people show up or a busload of people show up and they say, I want to buy your house. I'm going to give you 15 offers on your house and all that. That sometimes actually can happen these days because there's virtually nothing on the market. And just people ask all the time, well, why is that? Long explanation, and maybe we'll dedicate one show just to that. But suffice it to say, that's what it is. There's very little on the market, so get used to it. Now, people say, well, there's going to be a lot more coming out in the spring. Well, welcome to spring. Today is the first day of spring. I don't know if it's the first full day of spring or it's just a partial day of spring. But either way, springtime is a wonderful time of the year for houses to come on the market. But you know what? They're not going to rush on the market this year. It's going to be kind of more of the same. The only thing that's going to be different is those houses are going to cost you more than they did last year because of appreciation rates based on supply and demand. That part's not cool, but also because the interest rates are high. It's just what it is. I mean, I don't want to sound harsh and say suck it up, but here's the deal. If you want eggs, we've seen the price of eggs go through the roof because of a number of reasons. Now the price is starting to come down. But the price of eggs is still higher than it was a year ago. If you want eggs, you're going to pay the price that you're going to have to pay to get your eggs. Otherwise, guess what? You're not eating eggs. But let's talk about some of the home seller mistakes that people make. You know what? A lot of people think that the number one reason a house doesn't sell is because it is the price. Well, price is a factor. It certainly is a factor. And 77% of the houses don't sell because the houses are overpriced. But that says, well, there's a lot of other reasons that go into it. In fact, we have a special formula that we can identify what's really going on in a house and why it's not selling for one reason or another. But price is a factor. Interestingly enough, on the sheet that we refer to as the saleability rating checklist, it's not only is it just one of the factors, but there's 19 factors that go into a successful sale of a house, and price is not listed on, I'm thinking, until number five on the list. One of the things that is a factor about getting a house sold, and you may find this odd, but it's a factor, is showing availability. Yeah. 34% of the houses that don't sell is because people couldn't get in there. And you say, well, what the hell is that all about? I don't get it either. Typically, we do know a couple of things. When somebody goes to buy or look at what they call a multifamily house, a two, a three, or four family house, those are considered residential. Anything under four falls under a specific guideline. As long as you're living in it, you get a preferred interest rate. But if you try to show all of the units in a four-family property, sometimes it's hard to get the tenants to cooperate. So sometimes it's just physically hard to get people to come through the property. Not a lot of people like to buy a pig in a poke. I mean, they really actually do want to see the property. Now, maybe some savvy investor-type buyers will say, well, let me look at one of the units as long as the other units are somewhat reflective and I can see the leases and things like that. That's fine. But the average buyer, especially the average first-time buyer, if he's looking at a double, if he can't get in to see the whole thing for one reason or another, he's probably going to take a pass and not put an offer in on that property. So that's a mistake. You always have to have easy showing of properties. You have to be able to get people in there. In the olden days, I used to laugh when
typically what would happen is if you wanted to set up a showing on a property, you'd have to call the listing office. And when you called the listing office, what would happen is you'd get somebody at the front desk who was hopefully calling, answering your phone because they thought you wanted to buy a house, and they found out that you're an agent and you wanted to ask them to help you go to the big book and set up an appointment. They'd have to put you on hold. They'd have to call the homeowner. They'd have to go a whole bunch of rigmarole, and they would log all the calls that way. Today we have showing services that do that. It's much more efficient, thank God. But in the old days, it was pretty hard just to get a showing. And a lot of times you would find that you call the owner and you wouldn't be able to get a showing. They wouldn't let you in. And then you wondered why the house wasn't selling. And you say, well, what the heck was that all about? Stop. Here's something else that's a big mistake when you're going to sell homes. This part's not cool. If there's unpleasant odors. There was a lady by the name of Barb Schwartz who actually coined the term staging, to stage a house. And Barb was a brilliant marketer. She coined this phrase called staging. And she talked about one of the things that helps get a house sold is if it looks better, if it's staged. But she also went on to say, but if you can smell it, you cannot sell it. There's a lot of truth to that, because the power of smell is an extremely, extremely powerful sense that many times overrides the other sense. If you think about, you know, when you're a kid, you can probably think of some smells that were kind of, I guess, user-friendly. They made you nostalgic, and they made you think of different things, like maybe it was grandma's house. I mean, I still smell my grandmother's house. She was Italian. You could always tell what was being cooked that night, and it was a wonderful smell. And I can smell that in my head. So having strong offensive odors could be something like smoking. I always tell people, listen, you want to smoke? Great. Knock yourself out. But recognize you're probably going to have to cut your price by about 10%. Well, let's look at that for a second. If the average selling house these days is around, about $250 or so, that's a $25,000 hit that you're going to take on that price just because you smoke. I mean, really, if you think that I'm making that up, you try and sell a house where you got smokers. That's why when I have tenants in the property, I say, here's the deal. You know, I recognize we're in a very, 2023 world, and marijuana is being legalized and all this. This is no smoking of anything. I said, you can't even smoke a ham. You know, if you want to buy a ham, make sure it's smoked someplace else, but no smoking anywhere on the property, because whether you want to be a sport or not, it's just not a cool thing. And you know what? If you have people that are smoking in your apartments, it makes it difficult to rent the apartment to the next guy. It's just the way it is. You know, I did have a tenant at one point that, you know, it's a new generation, and he was a good guy, but he decided that he wanted to be a little more like the 60s, and he had his little cannabis party, and I had to say, listen, here's the deal. I've asked you nicely. I said, if you're going to do this, I said, understand, this is a two-family house here, and the people upstairs, I mean, they're your neighbors. They don't do it. You can't do it. So they finally stopped. But yeah, if you can smell it, you can't sell it. Barb Schwartz went on to say, you know, how difficult sometimes that can be. She had to specifically say to one person that, who unfortunately was older and not in good shape, and she had one of the bags with the urine in it. That's not quite a colostomy. It's the other kind of an ostomy. And, I guess, when you have that, it's not a great thing. But sometimes there's a little spillage, and sometimes in this particular case, the house smelled of urine. And she said, I hate to say this, it makes me smell, but saying in her own head, she's trying to help the person sell their house. And she says, if I can smell it, so can everybody else. She said, you're probably used to it. And probably, oh, she said, thank you for telling me. I wasn't aware. And she addressed it. And now it's not a problem. And she got the house sold. So sometimes real estate agents have to do things that are really uncomfortable. They have to have some uncomfortable conversations. You may love your dog, but the average person that's looking to buy your house probably doesn't like your dog, your wet dog smell. Not a cool thing. Not cool. I have dogs. So I really get this. Okay. Here's another mistake that sometimes sellers will make. They have repairs that need to get addressed, and they don't want to address them. They just say, I'm getting the heck out of here. No. Selling a house is different than living in a house. You can get it. It's just different. If you had a car, people get it. If you had a car and you want to sell it, I'm going to hazard a guess that anybody that's listening out there within the sound of my voice would say the same thing. They would tell you that they would at least wash the car before they try to put the for sale sign up. You would at least maybe try to clean the interior. You'd probably try to do that. And you may not, when you're living in your house, you may not clean it, you may not do this, you may not, but when you're selling it, it's a different game, man. It is a different game. So, yeah, so if you have different repairs, I love how a lot of times people have like 99% of the things done, but the little moldings and things like that. Yeah, you want to fix all those things. That's what people get there. Most of the times when people are asked to do things, they're Mickey Mouse repairs. Well, those Mickey Mouse repairs will cost you thousands and thousands of dollars to when you go to sell the house, and you could have saved yourself, made thousands of dollars by spending a couple, sometimes not even $100. Mickey Mouse repairs. Absolutely. I'm doing a commercial for Disney right now, calling them Mickey Mouse repairs. So, big mistake, though. Let me address those things. This is a stupid one, and I don't know why people would do this, but this goes back to the thing about living in a house and different than selling a house. Remove the clutter. This goes into the staging thing. 32% of the houses that don't get sold don't sell because they have clutter all over the place. The very first house that I bought, I was introduced to real-life hoarders, and I specifically said it was a three-family house I bought, and I had to have the place delivered vacant because the hoarders were so bad. When I looked at the property, somebody said, I think I've heard that they have rats in there. And I said, rats? I'm surprised they don't have dinosaurs in there. I mean, if I'm sitting in my office and I look at the wall, it's like maybe 12 feet away. If I was in this house, I would not be able to see that wall. I couldn't see 3 feet ahead of me. That's how much clutter was in there. And they're trying to sell the property. So luckily, I was at least able to buy the property, and they were able to deliver that apartment vacant. Took them 6 months. And the interest rates went up during that period of time. In fact, they went up 3.5 points because that was way back in the early days. But you know what? I was happy. I still have it to get the property. But it's a big mistake. Clean up your acts. Clean up your clutter. You got to do it. Or don't put the house on the market because you're going to cost yourself thousands of dollars. So we talked about price. Price is a factor, certainly. But the odors and not making repairs and the cluttering of the space, we talked about showing availability. But here's one that really fries me. It's when the seller is unwilling to negotiate. 21% of all the sales fall through because the seller was not willing to negotiate. That's not cool. That's a really big mistake. And I always say, here's the deal. Most agents will tell you that when you get an offer on your property, you have two decisions. You can accept or you can decline. And I think that's bad advice. I don't think that's cool advice at all. I think here's the deal. If you get an offer, you get two choices, but it's not accept and decline. It's accept or counter. Because here's the thing with any offer. Any offer has something that's good about it. There's five major components about an offer. One, the party's making the agreement. Two, how much they're paying. Three, how they're paying. Is it cash? Are they giving you, asking you to hold a mortgage? Are they giving you FHA financing? But how they're paying for it, how much money they're putting up front, all of that goes into the mix. What's included? What's not included? Do you want the dogs? Do you want the appliances? Do you want the cars? Sometimes you can make a transaction really, really murky. Okay, and the other thing is, when are you going to close on this thing? Closing and occupancy are two different things. In most cases, they treat them as being synonymous, but they're not. So that being said, it's a big part of the negotiation. And I would say to Mr. and Mrs. Seller, I say, here's the deal. You got two choices, accept or counter. So let's presume that you get an offer that's $20,000 under the asking price, but it's cash, and they can close in 30 days. Well, there's lots of things about the offer that you like the cash. That's good. You like the fact that they can close in under 30 days. You might like the fact that they're not asking you for the appliances. Lots of things you like it. The only thing you don't like is the price. So you counter them on the price. Now, let's say you're asking $200,000 and somebody comes in at $100,000. We know that's probably not going to happen. But if you say, no, I'm not going to negotiate, can't get it. If you're not going to be able to negotiate, then what's the story? I mean, but yeah, I think you can always negotiate on certain things. But yeah, so be willing to negotiate. If you're not willing to negotiate, then, you know, what's the point of living as far as I'm concerned? Those are some of the mistakes that you're going to make. And they're all avoidable. But so talk to your real estate agent. He's your friend. She's your friend. They're your friend. Whatever pronoun you want to use, they have a specific interest in wanting to get your house sold because they don't get paid. Real simple. It's a business. And you know what? I always think that my job when I'm working with a seller is to not just represent their interest, not just to act like a fiduciary. And yes, fiduciary is one of those magical words, which implies a relationship that establishes great trust. And when you do that, things magically can work for you. So trust them. And they're not just in it for the money because it's a job, and they want to get the job accomplished. But by the same token, they have very strict guidelines that they have to go by. And as fiduciaries, we sometimes talk about the old car that they have to drive. It's the acronym for OLD: obedience, loyalty, due diligence, confidentiality, accountability, and reasonable care. So would they do this for themselves? If they wouldn't, I don't know if that's reasonable care. You know, so understand there's things that you can do to help yourself, and there's things that you can do to hurt yourself. But my favorite tactic is when they are unwilling to negotiate and say, "Nope, I won't even counter that." Well, that says that you're not in the game. And for some people, they have to feel like it's a game. Using my example before was, you have a $200,000 to come in at 100. Okay, so maybe you count it 195. Would you take 195 on a 200? I think you would. What that tells that particular buyer is, listen, I'm willing to negotiate, but I'm not willing to get raped. This is wrong. I mean, to offer 50 cents on the dollar is crazy. That actually is a specific strategy for people, to offer 50 cents on the dollar. There are people that offer 50 cents on the dollar for all the properties that they might want to consider, and they're doing it in today's market. You can do that. Certainly, this is America, and you're allowed to do that. But having said that, it's a crazy thing to do, and you're not going to be buying a lot of houses with most agents. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if most agents at a certain point would drop you because we're seeing offers going way over the asking price just to be in consideration. We did an offer yesterday. There were $35,000 over the asking price, 14 offers, and I want to say I don't think they had a shot. I don't think they had a shot. Even though it was a clean offer, everything's good, $35,000 you think would certainly do it. And he said, well, but what was the price point? It was $35,000 on $500,000. And that's not that big a deal, you say. This was $35,000 on a really inexpensive house, $145,000. It came in $180,000. You would think that would get somebody's attention. Nada. 14 offers. We weren't even in the game. So it's what it is. I mean, so sometimes pricing can become a factor. In this particular case, they did everything right, and they were able to fetch multiple offers, and they were willing to negotiate, but they didn't have to do all that much negotiation because they had a lot of good offers. They could pick and choose. So all of that being said, those are the elements that go into making for successful transactions. Make sure you can show the property. Make sure it's not overpriced. Make sure you're willing to negotiate. Make sure you don't have any unpleasant odors. Make sure you make all the small repairs. And also, make sure that you don't have a lot of clutter. These days, especially, one of the things it makes it a little tougher is buyers expect to get the moon. And they're willing to overpay to get it, but years gone by, young first-time buyers, they would think nothing of finding something and fixing it up. Finding something, well, just needs a little paint, needs a little cosmetics, it needs a little this, needs a little that. Buyers, they don't really want to do very much of that. They want to buy, and the only thing that they want to have to add are the keys. They will pay for the keys to get in the house, and they don't want to do very much. So it becomes incumbent upon the seller to make sure that the property is in good condition, and it shows very, very well. And that's a term that we call market ready. You got to be ready for the market. If it's not ready for the market, you're either going to lose time or money or both. Or worse, you're going to get really aggravated. A real estate transaction, to be cool, should not be that complicated. And it shouldn't be so arduous that you want to shoot yourself. I mean, there's certainly a certain amount of inconvenience. As I say, living in a house is different from selling a house. But you know what? Inconvenience is a lot different from being made to be totally out of your mind. And that's what a real estate transaction should not be. Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of inconvenience. I mean, the simple thing here, showing your house. I mean, having to, you know, make sure that it's ready to be shown at a moment's notice. And you really need to do that, because when a buyer wants to buy, he wants to see the property now. Now, granted, when the agent makes an appointment, he's going to give you a couple of hours leeway time. He may even give you 24 hours notice or more. But when they want to get in, they want to get in. I always tell sellers, I said, here's the deal. If we call to make an appointment and, you know, you had people over the house the night before and you've got most of it cleaned up, but you still have a sink full of dishes that you haven't loaded into the dishwasher, this is what I'm not going to let you do. I'm not going to let you say, well, it's really not convenient. Have them look at another house. Because guess what's going to happen? They're going to look at another house, and guess what they're going to do? They're going to buy another house. Our job is to get you as many showings as possible. So don't make our jobs hard. If you have dishes in the sink, this is what's going to happen. We're going to bring the buyers through, and they're going to look at your house. Then they're going to go on, maybe look at another house, and you know what they're going to say to themselves? You know what? I really like that house back there with the dishes around the sink. Don't think it as an insult. Think it as that they liked your house. They're not going to not buy your house because you have dishes in the sink. If you think that they're not going to buy your house because you, then you're delusional. I mean, that's super not cool. They're going to buy a house because that's what it is. So, but yes, but don't blow off the showings. The showings is really, if you really want to make life miserable for a real estate, start blowing off showings. Frankly, if you blew off more than one showing with me, I'd have to sit you down and say, you know what? I don't know that you're really taking this process seriously, because it's one of the things that can really scuttle your sale. We really want to have showings. We want to have people come through. We're seeing open houses these days with people, 60, 70 people at open house. Not an unusual thing. I went to an open house myself the other day looking for a house that I might want to buy. And I think there were 60 or 70 people, and it was 1:30 already, and it was on a 1 o'clock, 1 to 3 open house, and it was only 1:30. And it was like a circus. There was people going in. One person bought a dog. I said, "What's that all about?" You know, and it wasn't one of the, you know, it wasn't a service animal. It was a dog. It was a dog, like a pet dog. And heard about another situation. Like, oh my God. Somebody brought a dog to an open house, and they said, well, listen, you know, it must be a service animal. No, I'll keep him in my arms. He'll be fine. And it sure as shooting, they didn't keep him in their arms, and they let the dog roam around the house, and what do you think the dog did? Yes, the dog made a little deposit, and the seller had to be told, talk about not cool, as you can imagine, the seller hit the roof. They brought in Service Pro. And $1,000 later, the agent had to write a check for $1,000. The seller was still upset. They said, "How could you do this?" And you did. So don't be bringing your dogs to the open houses, please. It's just not a cool thing to do. But even as such, I mean, there were, like as I said, 60 people in the open house. People are just clamoring to buy houses. If you have a house that you're looking to sell, if you're having a house and you want to get a Dodge. I was listening to the Dan Bongino podcast the other day. He says, if you live in a blue state, get out now. Get out now. He says, it's time to move on. Well, New York happens to be a blue state. And, you know, we're hearing about people that are saying, I can't stay with anyone. I'm going to put my house on the market and go. That's fine. Let us know. We can help you go. We can help you get to your destination that much faster. So there. And you know what? If you do all of those things that we talked about, then you won't be making the seller mistakes that most sellers make. A lot of sellers make these mistakes. And you know what? It always fascinates, because we're talking about usually reasonably intelligent people, and they just don't know what's good for them sometimes. And you know what? I guess that makes sense. If you look at our population, we are obese as a society. This is not about fat shaming, but we are obese as a society, and nobody seems to really want to address it. I mean, they'll say, well, you can't fat shame people, but you know what?
the lifestyles that we're embracing, they're just not good for us. You know, I mean, I delight in the fact that I've never had a Big Mac and I've never had a Whopper. Never had one. Never had a desire for one. Now, I'll tell you every once in a while, I've been known to go into McDonald's for a burger. But I don't have a Big Whopper, a Big Mac, and I don't have a Whopper. I don't have and I try to avoid them because I have finally figured out that what they are selling is not really food. It's something else. I don't know what. And it's certainly not fast. These days, it is not fast. God, you, those cars. And I chuckled the other day. I was looking at people having coffee in Italy. And they showed, you know, people sitting outside and having all the umbrellas, pastries. Then they showed people having coffee in the United States. And basically, it was a drone over a McDonald's. This is some fast food place. And you could see the line of 35 cars that was going around. So they were going to drink the coffee and go. Yeah, it's still coffee, but it's not the art of coffee drinking like they have it in Italy. It's more of a social. That part's clear. So as we face the final countdown in our show, I'd just like to remind you that next week we should be having a really interesting show, as opposed to this dribble that you've just been talking your ear off for the last the last 29 minutes or so. But, it's what we are doing. And so we'll tune in next week and we'll have an interesting show. We're going to talk about some aspects that aren't directly related to the real estate side as to the quiet enjoyment of the real estate side. Because that's the whole point of buying real estate. It's I always say to people, and I hope that you live happily ever after. And you know what? If you're living in the wonderful world of 716, I think it's relatively easy to live happily ever after. I've been here for 37 years. I like it here. I like the fact that I have less than a 25-minute commute. I like the fact that I can get to the baseball game and be home in like 10 minutes. I like the restaurants. There's so much that I like that's why we have a podcast. I want to talk about all the things I like in 716.